The last speaker for this session is going to be Carol Miles, talking on watermelon grafting.
Thank you.
I'll just stand up for 10 minutes. You know.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you very much. Great audience. I'm presenting this work on behalf of my graduate student, Jesse Weimer, who's a master's student in my program, and we're looking at evaluating watermelon rootstocks for resistance to verticillium wilt in northwest Washington, and the vine that you can see here, that wilted vine, that's pretty symptomatic of verticillium wilt, certainly in our region and elsewhere. And then also working with Dr. Deborah Inglis, who's a plant pathologist. So Jesse is doing his work on horticulture and plant pathology in my program. All right, background about watermelon production. The industry in Washington State is worth about $5 million as of our census data last year, 2013. This represents a 33% decline in production over the last 5 years in Washington. We had 300 hectares reported in 2007 and 200 hectares reported in 2012. This decline is primarily a direct result of soil-borne disease pressure as reported by our growers. Grafting is used successfully around the world to manage soil-borne diseases in watermelon production, and that has been well shown throughout the literature. In addition, there do not appear to be any watermelon varieties or germplasm with resistance to verticillium wilt. So the breeding aspect of breeding for resistance to verticillium is not an option. The only other option in terms of genetic diversity or creating resistant varieties would be through genetically modified varieties, and we believe this is probably not a commercially acceptable option at this time for watermelon, but that's just my inclination. So a few studies have focused on identifying watermelon rootstocks with resistance to verticillium wilt. There were a couple of studies reported in the literature, but there's really not been a lot of work done. So we decided to focus on, predominantly because it's a problem in our region, verticillium wilt is the primary issue impacting our growers, and also there's not been a lot of work done, so nothing to really draw from immediately, so hence we've undertaken a series of research experiments. So this is Jesse in a watermelon field. This is us evaluating and harvesting watermelon just 2 weeks ago in the Columbia Basin, which is our primary production area for watermelon. This is a field of, about 180 acres overall. It's about 80 hectares in general. So one of our larger producers in Washington. So the objective of this study was to identify rootstocks with the resistance or tolerance to verticillium wilt for use in grafted watermelon production for Washington State. Materials and methods for this study. The results that I'm presenting here were for last year, 2013. We conducted the research at the center where I am located, which is in Northwest Washington. If you're not familiar with Washington State, then just really briefly, production is located in the Columbia Basin, which is on the east side of the mountains. The research center where I'm located is located on the west side of the mountains. But the reason we're screening our rootstocks germplasm in the west side where I'm located is because our field is naturally infested. We have continued documentation of 17 CFUs per gram of soil. This was last year. This year, we tested our soil and we're at 18 CFUs. So we kind of go up and down between 17 and 18 over the last 4 or 5 years of us doing this work. This is five times the level of the fields in the eastern part of the state where the production is located. What this means is this gives us a very good screening environment for germplasm. So that's the way we like to look at it. One of the issues that I constantly come up against with our funders is they keep telling us we don't grow watermelons in Northwest Washington, and I keep saying, I know we don't, but our job is to screen germplasm for resistance, and we have this very high natural level. So just kind of a little bit of an aside, but it's a little frustrating when you're writing grants and you keep getting criticized for that issue. Anyways, in this study, we included 28 cucurbit entries. In the three different genus here, Cucurbita, Lagenaria, and Benincasa. 11 of these were commercially available rootstocks, 14 were from the USDA germplasm accessions, and I'll say right now that those 14 were in the Lagenaria class. There are thousands of accessions of cucurbits in the germplasm the repository, so we had to really be very selective in what material we were going to go after. We decided to go after Lagenaria because there wasn't a lot of work done on Lagenaria. We also thought that it might be well suited to our production environment. So there are thousands of opportunities to screen accessions out of USDA. We just selected 14 of them. Also included in our study were two susceptible watermelon controls and one grafted watermelon. And Sugar Baby, and you'll see here a little bit, Sugar Baby is a susceptible control that we use systematically in our project just because it shows very good symptomology. It tends to be affected pretty early on, so it's a very good control variety. Our design was a randomized complete block with three replications, and we visually, I say we, of course this is the grand we, and really it's Jesse. So Jesse, as part of his master's program, is visually rating plants for verticillium wilt. And the rating system that we use is a percent plot canopy impacted with chlorosis, necrosis, and wilting, which are all symptoms of verticillium wilt. And then we graph the severity over time to generate an AU area under the disease progress curve, or the relative area under the disease progress curve. That's the RADUPC value, which we use when you have a different planting time. So when you have your entries that are put in the field at different dates, you have to go to an RADPCU value. So that's what this data is presented here, because we had different planting dates of the material because they germinate at different rates. So that was something we just had to deal with in the course of the study. And then we also do a plant assay, so we collect the plant material from the field, incubate it, analyze, or do symptomology for verticillium. Dalii is what we're looking for, and then we send it out to the lab for confirmation. So we also do a plant assay. So this is just what our field looks like, just to give you an idea of the field. And just, I want to draw your attention to that plot right there. That's Sugar Baby on August 2nd in our field in Mount Vernon. And here we are about a month or so later, and there's that same plot right there. That is Sugar Baby. And what you can see there is that the vines are essentially completely dead. The fruit is almost completely formed, and this is very classic of what happens with verticillium wilt in our region, is you get about 75% there to harvest and the whole plant dies. And so you can lose up to 75% of yield. Growers are losing a significant amount of their yield, but they've got all of their production costs already invested in the crop. So it's a huge crop loss and a cost to our growers. This is just an up-close view of what it looks like on the plant. You can see on the photograph on the left, the vine starts to wilt one vine at a time, and then that vine, first it collapses through wilt, and then it dies, and then it's vine after vine in the same plant, and then you can see on the right, you end up with a completely dead plant. This is how we're rating for verticillium wilt. So we rate on a scale of 1 to 6, and I should say there is also a 0 here, where 0 is completely non-impacted. But in general, we rate on a scale of 1 to 6 because we see verticillium wilt almost from the outset in our plots here, because, again, we have a relatively high level of inoculum in the soil. So this is, in general, what it looks like. It's a little complicated when you're rating, because you're rating for three different symptoms. You're rating for chlorosis, necrosis, and also wilt. So you're having to do the three things simultaneously, but the chlorosis is what you see first, then you see necrosis, and then you see the wilt. So that's kind of how it progresses. So this is the data. This is the results of our study here. And again, it's 28 different lines with Sugar Baby and Crimson Sweet. You can see right here, Sugar Baby is our susceptible control. Here's Crimson Sweet, which we also put in as a susceptible control. But you can see that Sugar Baby, just on the relative AUDBC values, is significantly higher than most of the other entries in the study. Not statistically different from this group of entries right here, but definitely the highest overall. And we've seen this pretty consistently. This is our fourth year of doing these types of studies, and Sugar Baby always, you know, ends up at the top here. All the way down to these entries down here, this is an accessional Lagenaria. All the PIs are plant introductions, so those are all accessions from the germplasm repository. This is an interesting result right here. This is Crimson Sweet grafted onto Shintoza, and you can see that, just relatively speaking, it's the second lowest entry here in terms of disease symptomology, and Crimson Sweet non-grafted is the second highest. And so grafting really does appear to provide some level of control. And I think as a management option, I think there's really no question that it really can work, as long as we're, you know, starting off with some good material. You can see here are two PIs. Again, these are Lagenaria, but they had the fourth and fifth highest rating. So, you know, definitely it's worth looking at the material to see how it rates and going for the lesser material, or the material that has the lesser symptomology. So then from the field, at the end of the season, we collect stems, so about an 8-inch stick of stem. This is from the root ball up to about 8 inches of length. We take off all the branches, all the leaves, surface sterilize it, split it, put it into an incubator box, and then incubate it over a course of a couple of weeks, and you know the disease just blossoms in that environment. And here you can see this is a picture from Jesse. He's very, very good at under the microscope, and he's actually a very good plant pathologist, so he's done a great job on this project. But this is Verticillium dallei. These are the growth from Verticillium dallei. You can see the vegetative growth, and then these are the microsclerotia. These black specks right here are the microsclerotia of Verticillium. So he was able to isolate, and then we sent these off to the lab. So then they were identified at the lab. They were confirmed at the lab level with PCR. So Verticillium dallei were isolated and confirmed for Crimson Sweet, Sugar Baby, both of our susceptible controls. And then the one of the PIs here came back positive for Verticillium dallei. And then interestingly enough to us, although the structures look like Verticillium dallei, there were several that came back positive for Isaacii, Verticillium Isaacii. And this would, if this indeed holds true, so we're actually in the process of following this through, this would be the first reported occurrence of Verticillium Isaacii on this material in our region. And the reason this is important is because the symptomology looks just like Verticillium dallei or Verticillium wilt. So in the field, it looks pathogenic. But it might not be dallei, it might be Isaacii. So our pathologist is very happy. That's really what that means. Just new disease to study. So the results from this work is that all of the entries displayed at least some Verticillium wilt symptoms, and microsclerotia were observed in all but two entries, and those are labeled here or given to you here. All entries had lower mean RADUPC values, and then the susceptible watermelon controls, and Crimson Sweet grafted onto Shintoza had a 13-fold lower value than the non-grafted Crimson Sweet. So again, this just really affirms for us that grafting really can provide good tolerance levels for Verticillium wilt in a non-fumigated field environment, which is really what we're shooting for. Just a repeat of the information that we have here. There is a PI line that has the lowest Verticillium wilt symptomology, which indicates that there's an opportunity there to really look at the germplasm as a source of our rootstocks. And the reason this is important is because right now all the rootstocks are essentially imported from outside the United States. And so this gives us an opportunity to generate rootstocks in the United States, which would provide us with our own material, which could be of interest to several companies. When we grouped the last point here, let me just go to this slide here. When we looked at all the commercial rootstocks versus the accessions, they were not significantly different. However, if you look at the lowest mean values in the germplasm, they were lower than, and this is a good low, right? This is what you want. You want the lowest symptomology here. There is more diversity and lower ratings for the germplasm than there were on the commercial rootstocks that we evaluated, which again means that there's opportunity there to look at the accessions for selecting new rootstocks. So I think this pretty much just summarizes everything I just said, and I don't know how much time I have, 1 or 2 minutes left?
About 2 minutes.
2 minutes left. So I think this pretty much summarizes everything. Maybe the second point here is of importance, which is that the grafting delayed symptom onset, allowing the fruit to mature. So again, even though the plants were affected by Verticillium wilt, the fruit reached maturity, which means that the growers had a harvest, which is very significant. So that's kind of what you're trying to get to. Commercial rootstocks seem to be effective without any further development, so this is certainly a good opportunity, but the accessions provide us with good germplasm to investigate for new rootstock development that would be domestic, potentially domestic origin. And Jesse has a greenhouse study going on right now to do the follow-up assay, re-inoculating, basically doing Koch's postulates. All right, so just my final slide here. Technical assistance was provided by the plant pathology program at Washington State University, as well as the staff in my program. And our funding comes from Washington State University, as well as Northwest Agriculture Research Foundation, which is the grower groups, Commission for Pesticide Registration, and the Skagit Men's Garden Club. I just have to point that out, because for the first time in history, they were able to grow and harvest watermelons in Northwest Washington through our program. So they thought we were onto a good thing. So thank you very much. I think I have a minute for questions.
We've got about 30 seconds for a question. You can take one question.
Senjun.
Is it one question? Okay.
That's it. Time's up.
Crimson Red has a...
Crimson Sweet.
Confirmed. Is that from grafted or
non-grafted? Non-grafted. Those were our non-grafted controls.
So the grafted one didn't have anything in it?
The grafted also had verticillium in it. So we found there was verticillium symptoms on all entries in the study. And we were not able to confirm verticillium dahliae, and that just shows the importance of really repeating these studies over time, because just because you're not able to confirm it, so that means with the lab assay, so you collect your plant sample, you clean it off, you incubate it, you observe it, any structures you observe, then you collect and send to the lab. They were not confirmed at the lab level, but I think really you just have to repeat this over time. One time is not, can't publish it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for questions, and we can always see you afterwards. But thank you, Carol.
Thank you.